Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday morning. Excited to talk some mixed martial arts with you guys for the next hour or so. We got a fun interview scheduled with OAM, Olivier Aubin Mercier. He's from the PFL. He's their lightweight champion from the 2022 season, and he's already off and running 1-0 in the 2023 campaign. So we'll chat with him about his upcoming fight about a month away versus the genius Anthony Romero. And then we'll discuss all the latest news. You know, this week, there is no major MMA promotions going to work. So it's a fun week off. We'll focus in on some of the news that's out there, including an update on Cain Velasquez and his court proceedings, as well as the tiff between Dana White and Aljamain Sterling. They keep going back and forth, back and forth. And there ain't going to be too much power slap talk over here. They had their big event yesterday, and aside from seeing a few knockouts on social media, I didn't watch it. Goz didn't watch it. But, I'm just being upfront. I don't think there's much to talk about from our end. If it's your jam, hey, go do it. But anyways, we'll start the show. Although I do know that Wolverine guy Goes did lose. So he was one of the two coaches, and I guess he was a champion. He did lose, but yeah, man, I can't even say the fists were flying. The palms were flying. I did see some KOs. I still can't really get into this thing. So I don't know. Did you have any comment on it?
I only saw clips. And in the clips, I'm still just confused. I saw some dude get annihilated. And he gets up and he can barely stand. He falls back down and he gets up and falls back down. Then he finally gets up and like falls towards the table and kind of holds himself at the table. And the whole time the referee's kind of still doing that dance. Like, can he keep going or can he not? And I'm thinking, man, if this were MMA, like that'd be a wrap. There's no way they'd let him go back out. And sure enough, while he's on that table, like he's staying there for a second, but I think they kind of like push him a little bit just to make sure. And he falls back But I just don't get it. It's just so brutal, dude. I don't understand, like, if you are a power slapper, what is it that you're looking at? Like, I want to have a 30-fight career. I just want to keep doing this till I get KO'd. Because a lot of times, you're not even going to get a chance to throw your slap, you know? Mm. And you're just going to walk up, get slapped, and walk out. It's no different than when we're messing around with our what ifs of, you know, that sort of thing. So I just don't really, I guess I just don't really get it.
Yeah. And you know, there's another thing that I happened to, late night, I was dancing around on YouTube and I did come across Dana White's post-event conference. I can't call it fight. So post-event conference, press conference. He did say some guys are taking home $10,000 bonuses. I did see one of the Nelk boys apparently cash tip one of the guys that won. It's for some people, I guess, but I don't see them really as athletes. I see them as bodies that are being thrown out there for entertainment. I guess I'm happy. Let's say one of these guys makes 200 grand and maybe only gets knocked out three times and sails off into the sunset. Maybe I'll tip my hat to him. Who knows? But I just don't think that's the case. I think to get here, you've probably been in these slap things a few times. And I'm not saying each time is a concussion, but they're getting to the point where every time they hit each other, it's pretty good force. They do have, you know, the technique on that. And so it's no longer like just, you know, you're messing around, goofing off or anything like that. But the worst thing goes is, and I think this happened yesterday, there was a lot of fouls. And the worst thing is when you hit someone, knock them out, but you fouled, so you get disqualified, but they win. I just don't see the sense in that. Or they couldn't continue. Like, the whole match is ruined. The fact that the coin flip determines so much, you could be the greatest slapper ever, but if you're always losing three coin flips and someone's taking you out and you get to really unleash your palm, then how does that make any sense? Like, there's just no protection to it all. I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't balance out. In the press conference, he was even asked, is there some fine tweaking? You know, because Dana White says, yeah, those fouls, they were there. We need to figure it out. And so the journalist, I think it was Amy Kaplan, said, well, what's your plan to figure them out? And he goes, well, you know, he goes, in the Ultimate Fighter, we had some obstacles and then we figured it out. That's what we do here. But he had no answers for how they plan on figuring out this whole foul thing, you know? And I remember, goes, I actually lie. I did tune into YouTube. I think it must have been a prelim, and they were promoting it. And I guess it was like a free fight or two, but I could have sworn I heard Dan Ely, who was on the call with Michael Bisping, say it was a situation where one guy got slapped. The guy that slapped him committed a foul. The guy that got slapped was able to get up, get his equilibrium, say what he needed to say to the referee so that he could continue. Then he had about a minute to, you know, rest or get to the line before he did his thing. And I could have sworn I heard Dan Ely say, you know, if he just would have fallen and not answered the bell, the other guy would be disqualified. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Jesus, that almost sounds like MMA, where back in the day, the referees would even go, well, you know, if you can't continue, I'm going to disqualify him. You know, they'd be out in the open about it. And some of the fighters would say, well, what do you know? It turns out I can't continue. I'm seeing double, you know, and like the manipulation of rules. This thing is, I don't know. There's so many things that don't make sense about it. On top of the fact that I just think it's ridiculous that it just can't bring me in. Now, this is what I told people. If you were to send me a text with a link to one of these and go, dude, you got to see this one, right? I'll see it. It's not like I don't see, you know, guys flying off their bikes or people on those trampolines flying out, you know. Yeah, of course I watch that stuff. You know, I watch it. I don't watch it all day. But I watch it. I usually chuckle. Usually you can tell someone's just in some pain, but they're all right. But I'm not laughing at their demise. I guess I'm just laughing at their stupidity. So I do watch that stuff, right? I just can't get into a whole league about it. I'm also not, you know, dumb enough to believe that this can take off and be something. And you know what goes? If it turns out that it does and it's whatever, okay, but I still stand by, along with many others who I've talked to, that this is just dumb. You know, it's just not my thing. There's a lot of things that have taken off that aren't my jam, and that's fine. But at least those things I can say, well, that kind of makes sense. Like, I think I've gone to one OP Pro surfing competition in Huntington Beach. It's yearly, right, in July. And when I was there, it was pretty cool. But I don't watch every surfing event throughout the year.
I can't.
But I get it makes sense to me. What they do is beautiful out in the ocean, you know, and some guys wipe out, some guys do crazy stuff, and that's that. But this one, I don't see the rhyme or reason to it.
I just can't get around somebody trying to make millions off of this. Because to me, and I know that it's not the same thing, but what I'm trying to explain is I get the same feeling of watching this as I would like putting animals against each other, right? Like dog fighting or something like that. Like that same pit you get in your stomach, I get that same pit. And I know it's not exactly the same, but it's that feeling of, oh man, you know, like, And I don't know if that's coming from like covering the sport as long as we have and just kind of seeing the effects of, you know, you interview so many people throughout your lifetime, meet them, and then you see them change by the time their career is done. It kind of affects you a little differently now when you know, they're getting these freebies, these just free KOs. You know, that guy's going to come home to his family and probably not be the same guy for a while. It's just hard to watch, dude.
Yeah, and if you think about it, other than fighting to the death, this really is as real as it gets. That's one of the UFC's taglines. Be happy with this, Dana White. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is it. You hit the jackpot, and this thing's doing great. $13 billion worth is the company. I mean, it's not all yours now because you sold off at $4 billion, but that's still an impressive number. The Fertittas, I think they got another station's casino going up, business as well for them. I think they have a skateboarding league, a surfing league. Like, you know, best of luck there. But do we really need this? I almost feel like the next league they're going to have is two sky jumpers jumping out with no parachutes, and their partners have to go after them, kind of like Bodie and Johnny Utah, you know. And If you can catch them, let's see who can go the lowest, and whoever pulls their parachute the lowest wins. You know, you're the ballsiest of the parachuters or whatever. But there's going to be one of those days where the other guy doesn't get to him and someone gets splattered. Like, I just feel like it's as dumb as something like that. I almost just made that up on the fly. You know, I don't know of no league like that, but I don't know. I don't get it. You know when the Russians fight like 200 on 200? You ever seen them when they're dressed in red and blue or red and white and they go and they fight? Have you ever seen them? They go and it's like a scrum and they're beating each other. Then some guys fall off to the side and three guys beat up one guy. Well, what I've noticed is they'll beat them up. Maybe there'll be a Vanderlei Silva soccer kick, you know, just for good measure. But then they help each other up and then they go their own ways and it's like, I can almost live with that. You know, you get a little bit of the rush of the fight. A couple of guys get stomped, but then they just kind of go off and do, you know, like, I guess they, you know, they'll shout a few things at each other, but they really do help each other up and just kind of go their own way. And it doesn't turn into anything like that. Like, nobody's saying, oh, yeah, well, I got a gun, you know, or no one pulls a knife or nothing like that. That one almost seems more gentleman-like than this power slap thing. But whatever. All right. Here I said no time to talk power slap. We gave it 12 minutes or 10 or something like that. How about this thing going on with Dana White and Aljamain Sterling? The latest is, so here's kind of how what happened. Aljamain Sterling defeats Henry Cejudo. Aljamain Sterling knows O'Malley's next. So he's even calling out Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley's there. Sean O'Malley comes in. They face off. There's the jacket incident with Mirab Dvalishvili. It was kind of comical. It was cool. I actually loved it. They preview it. And then Dana White was asked when this thing can go down. And he goes, well, you know, we're thinking of going to Boston. I think we're going with this fight. And now that was what on May 6th that fight occurred. And last Tuesday, so let me see, May 23rd. Yeah, it was May 16th. The same day as Francis Ngannou, Dana White basically put this fight on the map. He said it's official. It's headlining UFC 292 in August. And so then Aljamain Sterling did an interview where he said, well, you know, we verbally agreed, but I still got to get checked out by the doctor. My feet are sore. I did a lot of kicking in that fight. I mean, the guy did go 25 rounds, and I got a few other injuries. He didn't want to disclose and tip off, you know, my neck, my back, my this, my that, whatever. So he kind of danced around it a little bit, but he did say his feet. And then he basically said, look, I'll probably wind up making it, but, I mean, I'm just being honest with you. He was talking to Ariel Helwani about his situation, and that was that, you know. So then, of course, the media goes to Dana White and says, Aljamain's not so sure. And that's when Dana White said, well, this kid can't get out of his own way. Sometimes it's just, you know, kind of giving off that vibe that it's not easy working with Aljamain Sterling. Aljamain Sterling says, bro, why do you always have to treat me like that? Can I get some respect? You know, because he did his weekly scraps thing. So Dana White's asked again, you know, when did I disrespect you? You know, somebody just asked me what's happening. Somebody said, I shared the story that Henry Cejudo was blowing up my phone because Aljo said he might not be ready. So all I said was, you know, that this was something that was agreed to. And so that's why I'm promoting it. And finally, the last thing Aljo said was, hold on a second. You actually started saying this fight was happening on my fight night. So if anything, you kind of jumped the gun. So I know there's a lot of back and forth here goes, but what's your reaction to what's gone on between those two? And Aljamain's kind of kept a respectful boss, respectfully, this is what happened. Sometimes he gets a little angry, but then he seems to dial it in too.
I understand his frustration because he doesn't get treated the way other fighters do. I think he's making great points, you know, that he just fought, man. Like the fact that Dana White would even mention an interim title again, like those to me, like that's kind of like a threat in a way. Right. And if the dude's not 100% healthy, I mean, I want a true representation of both guys in this fight. I want a fair fight. And, you know, to me, it just feels like they're putting a lot of pressure on him to get this done sooner than later. Why? You know, other people will give you different reasons. Some people will say, well, because they know that that's the advantage. You're giving O'Malley an advantage, right, of getting a banged up Aljamain Sterling rather than giving him rest and proper time to prepare. So it just depends, man. But I think when things like that happen over and over again, I think you get a little bitter, and I think Aljamain Sterling is a little bitter. Now, Aljamain Sterling, on the other hand, yeah, he's saying things, you know, like, well, and this, and we all know sometimes what that can mean. So, yeah, I understand also a little bit of not making your things a little easy. But then again, like, what champ does, really? Like, I don't know that many champs that don't try to get the most out of being a champion. You work your entire life to become a champion. So that you can maybe flex a little bit when you are. And I don't know that Aljamain Sterling has been flexing all that much the way you've seen other people in this situation try and get more out of the UFC. So I can't really blame him.
I think what I've seen in the past from Dana White and the champions he likes is he'll say something like, well, that's a date that we would like, but I got to check in, see how he's feeling, let him be with his family, let him relax and recover. And then we'll huddle up when the time's right, and then we'll make an announcement. Whereas with Aljamain, he's almost giving the feeling like, oh, it's the 19th. Oh, we'll throw him in there. He'll be all right. You know, like he's almost answering on his behalf. And I think that's the respect that Aljamain wants. He wants to get to that level where he feels like he's a co-promoter, a co-partner, even though he's technically an employee, even though he's technically not an employee. He's a 1099, you know, independent contractor. But, you know, the feeling that he's kind of working with them towards a date or something like that, and rather than, no, you're just kind of show up, this is the date, you know, otherwise we'll look for alternatives. Did you hear Dana White say they could go the interim route, or was that more from Sean O'Malley? Or
I thought I heard Dana White say something like that. Well, if he can't be ready, then somebody can step in on that date and we'll go the interim route or something like that. And that would just be ridiculous, man. Like, come on. That's way too soon.
I agree. If he said that, that's ridiculous. I was kind of looking to see. He did say, look, I'm not the one. This is from Dana White. I'm not the one that went out and said, if my body holds up when I'm promoting a fight, if you're not healthy, don't take the fight. We'll have somebody else fight. We'll do somebody else for the interim title. You're right. There it is. Don't say you're going to go out and fight and then start saying stuff like, if my body holds up. Yeah, that's wrong. I could see that pissing Aljo off. He just defended it, dude. This is May 25th. He defended it on May 6th. Why would we even be talking about an interim title?
That's fighters go a year
that you don't have enough of a card to charge $80 to people that you have to throw some sort of a tag out there like VMF or interim or whatever. But that's your bad. Alexa Grasso fought before him. John Jones fought before him, you know, and those two don't even have fights on the books.
Jamal Hill?
Huh?
Jamal Hill fought before him?
Jamal Hill fought before him as well. So, yeah, like Amanda Nunes, when she fights, the next pay-per-view is June 8th, I believe, or June 10th. We will be doing a watch-along, by the way, for that UFC. But when it happens, her previous fight was last July, 11 months. Mm-hmm. No problem. And she holds two belts. You know what I mean? So I could see Aljo going, dude, you know, like, I think Aljo almost led him to believe that he'll be there, although he does have a few things scheduled, you know, to see how his body is. But yeah, I think Dana's wrong here, you know. And look, what I don't want people to go is go, well, see, you motherfuckers are always asking him, hey, on fight night, what about this? What about that? And then Dana goes, on fight night, I don't like to make fights. No. We can have both. We can still ask Dana, hey, what do you think of this for Boston? And he can still say, hey, well, look, if both guys are healthy, I'd love to do the fight. Yeah, and this guy looks like he's next. He's clearly wiped out the division. And we'll huddle up and see if we can make it. And if not, then we'll look for alternatives. I mean, there's ways to say this without threatening people. I don't mind Cejudo stepping in for Aljo and fighting Sean O'Malley. However, I don't think it should be for an interim title. That's my beef. That's the thing I have. Because he just fought for the Undisputed and lost. And it was, you know, let me see, May 6th, June 6th, July 6th. 3.5 months and we need an interim title? That's ridiculous. That reminds me of the whole Francis incident a few years ago. We don't need an interim title. Your company should be good and powerful enough to go, it's Cejudo versus O'Malley, buy the pay-per-view, you know? And hopefully people buy it based off that, not some fucking dumbass interim title that just does not need to be there. It should be there if Aljo hasn't been able to fight for a while, and it looks like he won't be able to fight for a while, then sure, you know, we usually work off the one-year mark, give or take a few months. We kind of dance around with that. But at this point in time, that's ridiculous, man.
Yeah, and again, that's why people get bitter. That's why fighters get bitter, because they're saying, well, look, it's kind of obvious who you want in this situation and who you want to be champion, and you should never really get that feeling. We don't get that feeling from the NBA, right? We don't get that feeling from the NFL. It's just, it really is silly.
One thing I will say is I think Aljo responds too much to everyone. I think at some point just silence is golden and you leave it be. But he does seem like someone that likes to engage, whether it's Dana White or Sean O'Malley or even Henry Cejudo. It's like, you know, come on, bro. Like, that is part of being the champ, is you just say what you say at a certain time and then you hang back. And I wish you would hang back a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although his points are usually pretty good, because Sean O'Malley was giving them a little bit of crap. And then he said, well, how many times have you fought? Me and you fought on the same card in Abu Dhabi. And since then, I fought Cejudo, and you're not fighting until you fight me. But then before that, you know, Aljo had fought, I guess that would have been TJ. No, TJ was in Abu Dhabi. So before that would have been Peter Yan.
And you look at guys like Bilal Muhammad and Beneil Dariush, who are constantly fighting, giving you everything you ask for, but they don't get a shot. So, I mean, that's what makes the whole thing so frustrating.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Well, he defended himself pretty good. I'll give him that. But, you know, there was a little bit of smooching at the end. Boss, respectfully. I kind of like it when you don't have to say, hey, motherfucker, you don't say that, but I think you can still stand firm and not do the smooching because you don't feel it. You know, you're not, you could tell he's pretty pissed. So stand up for yourself as a man and say what you got to say. That I'll give Dana White. Usually he's allowed people to say stuff like that and not held them against it, but maybe he feels like he's going to be in the doghouse even worse. Who knows? one last thing here, and then we'll get to our interview with OAM Olivier Aubin Mercier. You know, Johnny Walker posted on social media that he's still confused. He is confused by Anthony Smith's bizarre in-fight claim of attacking his family. That fight was over a week ago. What are you confused about? Like, we've all kind of covered it in some way. What we haven't heard is from Anthony Smith directly, and nor can none of us prove it. But it's obvious that this probably has something to do with the 2020 incident, which was about 3 years ago, where somebody broke into Anthony Smith's house, and Anthony Smith fought that guy, and that guy was a wrestler. So Anthony Smith said, hey, it was a hell of a fight, you know, but then eventually he kicked his ass, and that was that. So it's obvious he's referring to that. What I don't understand is, you think Johnny Walker, look, he won. We gave him his flowers. You're the man. Anthony Smith gave him props too. Why is he coming back weeks later and saying, I'm still confused, posting a video? It almost seems like bad sportsmanship, because how could someone not have told you, well, you know, it might be this, or how could you not have at some point figured it out that you have to do that? To me, I almost saw it as a slight, you know what I mean?
I think it was unnecessary, but I would say that if that is because of that night, that's happened some time ago, and those types of signals would have already happened, right? So I would wonder, well, why is anybody putting Anthony Smith in a cage if he's having these issues? There could be just a chance that it's just something that Anthony Smith maybe tells himself to motivate himself.
Right.
I really don't know. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's kind of just unnecessary. I think regardless of how it makes him feel or what, I don't listen to Anthony Smith's podcast, but I think that's a good place to maybe address that, because a lot of people were somewhat wondering about that. And, you know, sometimes, like, you get in the corner and the corner man's going to put his finger in your chest and say, this man's trying to take away from your family. He's trying to take food off your table. Like, right. I don't know if that could maybe just be him saying that to himself, or you're right, it could be something traumatic that is coming up again. But I just feel like if it were that, we would have seen signs way earlier than this. And mm-hmm. I think a coach probably would have seen that and said, hey, dude, you can't, something's wrong. You know, you gotta go see somebody about this. So I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I'd love to hear Anthony address it. But yeah, Johnny Walker, it was probably unnecessary.
The fight was on May 13th. He posted this on May 24th. In 11 days, he couldn't put two and two together is my thing. And even if he's one of those guys like Cowboy or Fluffy that doesn't follow the sport, I'm sure someone around him, if he was so utterly confused about it and wondering, if you're wondering, you probably ask someone like, hey, what do you think happened to this guy? You know, like, mm-hmm. to me, it just seems like he's just bringing up something that doesn't need to be brought up, you know, almost 2 weeks later, instead of just giving him props the same way he gave you props. It was your night. You looked great, but he's still confused. You know, like, I don't know. I just.
Yeah.
I wonder if somebody's going to be confused in almost 2 weeks and say, I wonder, hey, did the Lakers, are they still in the playoffs, or who won between them and Denver? I'm going to ask George. I'm confused. You know, like, come on, you know, you can get your info. Anyway, I think we're ready to go with our guest, Olivier Aubin Mercier. He's got a fight coming up against Anthony Romero on June 23rd. This is the defending champion from the 2022 regular season in the lightweight division, former UFC veteran, and now with the PFL. Junkie Nation, Gorgeous George and Goes, reporting for duty here on a Thursday. We get to talk to OAM Olivier Aubin Mercier, who is coming off a big win in the first regular season not game, but set of fights from the PFL. And now they're going to have their next set of regular season fights on June 23rd. It's a Friday, and they're on ESPN. You can catch it at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. He's in the main event against Anthony Romero. He's already banked 3 points as he proceeds through this season to see if he can be a back-to-back champion. Hello, OAM. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
Good. Thank you. How was your first title defense? That's how I looked at it. I know it's a regular season for the rest of you, but I see it as a title defense.
Yeah, I don't see it as a title defense, but went good. It went good anyway. So it was a 3 rounds, so I wouldn't call that a title defense. But was good. Was easier than I thought, and I feel great. I feel great.
All right, I hear you. It depends on how you feel. That's the most important thing. If you don't,
yeah,
feel
that exactly. Way,
that's fine. But the thing is in PFL, I guess you guys won't have title defenses. Mm-hmm. So I guess it almost seems like a success or failure type of a season. You either win it all, or I mean, maybe failure is too strong. But like, for example, Goz and I, we root for the Lakers. We just got eliminated the other day, and a lot of people are calling it a failure. I look at it as, well, we got deep in the playoffs. We just aren't going to hang the banner. We're not going to be the champs. But do you see it like that? It's either success or failure, or can you gain other things along the way?
Yeah, I see it as a success or failure. But, you know, there's a more there's a lot of things that could happen, you know. Like I could lose like 4 in the tournament, and I could lose then my next fight. I could get injured. If I get injured, like there's no fight anymore. So it's pretty crazy that there's a lot of option, and the best option, of course, is to win it all. But it's gonna be still gonna be a long path. I have 3 more fights, and right now I would say the what to worry me. It's my body, you know. It's still 3 more fights. I mean, last fight was good. I got maybe a little cut there, but that's pretty much it. My foot was a little bit swollen, but that's it. So I was good, but you know, every fight is gonna get harder on the body, and I think that's the big worry for me this year.
Do you still like the format the way it is? Regular season and playoffs?
Well, do I like it? I don't know if I like it, but I'm gonna do it. Like, for sure, it's a big achievement to finish it. So, mm-hmm. Do I like it? No, I don't like it, but it's a greater achievement, you know. To achieve something that you don't like, it's better than something that you like.
Yeah. What would you change about it? Would you do it like Bellator and the UFC do it? You just get a fight whenever you're ready, and then there's a road to the title, and one day you compete for the title? Is that, or is there something in the middle between what PFL is doing and the other leagues are doing?
No, I think it's good. I think the it's different than everything. So, like, as an athlete, I think it's hard because you cannot just cancel a fight. If you don't fight, it's done, you know. But I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, it's a great challenge. Like, for sure, I don't, like I said, maybe we don't like it, but it's one of the greatest challenges in combat sports. So I think it should stay like that.
Yeah, because the flip side is we hear from a lot of fighters that want to fight and they don't get the fight. The matchmakers aren't getting back to them. And next thing you know, 8 months go by. When you fought last April, you already knew you were fighting on June 23rd. So there's got to be some comfort in that, because it is your job at the same time. That's how you pay your bills. So you know when your money's coming in too.
Yeah, well, yes. But at the same time, I would have taken a little bit more vacation, I would say. I think it was a little bit in a rush. I think we talked about that in the last interview, but like, when I started the training camp, the last training camp, I was like, oh my God, already, you know, there was not a lot of motivation. But I mean, that's my work. So I went to training every day. I didn't skip a freaking training, all training camp, and I pushed myself for every training, even though the motivation was not there. And I think it showed it during the fight. So, yeah, I mean, I would have taken a little bit more vacation, to be honest.
You know, you're right. We did talk about that last time, and you shared with us that you were a little reluctant about hopping into this season. But now, with one fight down and technically almost two training camps in, are you happy with the decision? And how do you feel like you're holding up as compared to maybe same time last year?
I think I was in a better shape for my last fight than the first fight of the last year. So I was a lot better, and I think I'm in better shape right now than still last year, the second fight. But yeah, I'm getting old, you know. So for sure there is some challenge during this training camp, and I mean that's okay. That's PFL, and it's, to be honest, it's kind of fun, you know, to have those kind of challenges. It's motivating. So I feel good. I feel good this training camp. It's better than the first one anyway.
Do you think as far as ahead already as like next season, like there's no way I would ever do it again? Or do you kind of address that at the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to address that at the end of the season. But I was planning maybe not to do it. But then they signed Ngannou. They signed Jake Paul. So, and there's the rumor, you know, the Bellator rumor. That is flying around too. So let's see what happens.
Do you feel like you've already taken out the biggest threat so far in this first fight?
I wouldn't say the biggest threat, but one of the biggest threats. Yeah. I do. I still think Nathan Schultz is the guy to beat this year. But there was two guys to beat, I think. And it was Nathan and it was Burgos. So, yeah. I think I have one more big guy to beat.
What did you think of the signing of Francis Ngannou? It was pretty historical because it wasn't just, here's some money. I mean, he got, you know, he's going to be the chairman of the PFL in Africa. So he's going to have a big say in their growth there. He's going to have some room on the board for fighter advocacy for, you know, the PFL that you're a part of as well. He guaranteed a certain amount for his opponents. So when you heard about all that and you thought about it, you know, what was your reaction?
Well, first I was happy, you know, I was happy for PFL. It's like, there was a lot of view because of that. But it's going to be, I think, challenging for PFL to make it worth it. You know, I think there's a lot of money behind that. I don't think we'd know exactly the amount, but it's going to be a big challenge for PFL to make it worth it. And they need to make it worth it because we know what's going to happen after that. But yeah, no, it's nice to see, you know, it's nice to see the sport changing. And it was historical, like you said. And I'm really happy to see him here. And let's hope maybe sometime, I'm going to become the CEO of the Canadian PFL, you know?
There you go. There you go. I like your way of thinking. All right. Like Goz asked you, you said you have to think about next season at another time, but you said it did enter your head like about maybe not participating. Does that mean you would sit a year out, or would you say, hey, I only want to do the pay-per-view events, you know, but still participate somehow?
Well, I'm going to see the option, you know, I don't know what are the options, but I'm going to see, you know, I'm going to have to talk to them. I think three in a row is going to be really hard. It's going to be really hard mentally and physically. So I have to see at the end of the season. If everything go right, like, I don't see why not. But like with the experience of last year, I think I'm going to skip out the next one.
Is the worst thing, what is the worst thing? Is it the weight cuts because they're so close together, or just those actual training sessions? Like you said, you don't miss any one of them. Is it the actual training sessions in between?
I would say it's you get tired, you know, because you fight, you take 1-2 weeks to see your family, to enjoy life a little bit, and then training camp, and then you fight 1-2 weeks training camp. So it's hard mentally, you know. For a year, you become like a this crazy person that don't go out and do nothing but training. So I think I would say that was the hard part. You know, at some point I was like, I was just waiting for the end of the fight to be in vacation for my 2 weeks. You know, it was a little bit crazy. So, and when I won the tournament, I was more happy about the 2 months vacation than the $1 million. So I think it's pretty much the big thing. You know, there is so much sacrifice that you are doing during the year that at some point you have to end. You know, am I gonna do that for 3 years? I don't think so. I think I'm gonna try to enjoy life a little bit more. Like, I have a lot of fun training, but like, when it become crazy like that, I have a little bit less fun. The good thing is I make it always fun, always mentally challenging, you know, for me. But still, the fucking conditioning, man, I'm sick of this thing. But like I said, I don't skip a day. I don't skip a day. I like MMA. That's my passion. Conditioning, it's not, but I don't skip a day, and I have to do it. It's my homework. So yeah, I'm looking forward for a year without freaking Erdine or thing like this.
I'm just curious, were you good? Did you do good in school? What would you be doing if you weren't in MMA?
I was terrible. I was terrible. I don't know what I would be doing. Probably like some artist, you know, that you don't need school. Yeah, I'm lazy.
You got skills? You can
paint? You know, I was studying in multimedia when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I was really bad at school. Before that, but when I went to multimedia, something that I kind of like, you know, computer, making website and everything, I was pretty good actually. I was one of the best in the class, and I think that the creation, I really like to create, so I think that's something with creation, you know. And let's see what I'm gonna do after. I mean, like, I had a podcast for maybe 2 or 3 years, like a couple of years ago, about MMA in French, you know. And I think like people liked it. I feel like they liked it, and I think it was pretty good what I was doing actually, you know. Mm-hmm. And let's see what happened after. But I'm gonna do something like this. I really like to create, so let's see if I can find something to create again.
Got it. Okay. I know one subject you probably didn't do good at, and that's math. And I'm going to tell you why. Because technically, OAM, after you win your title in October, you don't fight till April. That's not 2 months. That's 6 months vacation. Now, I get that you have to prepare yourself for April, but aren't you kind of shortchanging the vacation?
Exactly. So, you know what? 4 months
off, don't you?
No, so it's 2 months vacation, and then you have to start the training again, the hardcore training, you know. So that's why I'm telling you, like, yeah, on paper, you say it's 6 months?
Yeah, because you finished, like, it was towards the end of October. So November, December, January, February, March, April.
Yeah, now, so I thought it was 5 months. So it's one more month, but yeah, so it's not really 5 months, because you have to start again training as soon as you can. So yeah, I was able to do some like to pass some time with my family. I was able to see my daughter a lot, have some time with my girlfriend. We went to vacation, you know, elsewhere. But still, I'm telling you, it go by fast, you know. And you have a lot of interview after that too. So for a month, I was just working. I was just doing interview. I was just calling people, people like you guys. So yeah, it was still work. So maybe I had one more month of truly like nothing to do, and then The next one I start again, and that was a training camp. So yeah, it was fast. In my mind, it was really fast.
Well, no one's ever done three in a row. So maybe between if you can get through this season healthy, maybe make some quick work of the playoffs or something, maybe that'll be your motivation, that third one in a row. No one's done it. But in the meantime, I guess the mission is to get the second one in a row. And so far, so good. You're 1-0 this season. You got your 3 points. You got your opponent coming up here, Anthony Romero, in about a month. So we wish you the best of luck. It's always fun to talk to you, OEM. Keep doing what you're doing. And thanks for the time, as always.
I got one last question.
This
is just a silly question, but I'm kind of curious. Everybody's got their price. And Ngannou's opponent is guaranteed $2 million. If for some reason something happened to that opponent and they called you with enough time, would $2 million be enough to get you in the ring with a guy like Francis Ngannou?
$2 million? No, not right now. Not right now. Maybe a year ago, yeah, for sure. But right now, I don't know. Maybe I could just stall, you know? Just go. You know the Ryan Hall technique? Every time the other guy moves, just go on the ground and hope for the best. I think that would be my strategy, you know?
Gotcha.
Nice. But yeah. He probably would go berserk on me if I was that small comparative. But yeah, that would be scary. I don't think for $2 million. I don't think so.
What's the most?
But hey, but like, let's say they tell me like, okay, so you can't fight him. Let's try a new thing. You know, you have one hand and you have two hands, and then you fight him. Yeah, maybe I'm gonna do that. Like one, I think one hand. It's good, you know. I'm good to do that.
One hand?
Yeah, one handed Ngannou. I think I would do it. What do you think?
If he has one hand and you have two, I think I would pick you.
Yeah, I think I would win. Like if you have one hand, I think I would win.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can blind him too, you know.
But what if he can use the second hand after round two? Would you still do it?
No, it's one hand for a fight.
For the whole fight? Like,
because the thing with one hand is you just have to concentrate on the hand and you cannot grapple. So like, let's say I'm so fast that I can dodge all punch. If you have two hands, it's just you can grab me by the neck and break it, you know? But if you have one hand, it's different, you know?
He's only got one hand to defend the submissions, though. You can't get him in the first two rounds?
I don't know. Because you cannot stay close to him. So even trying to take him down is so big that the elbows can... Oh, there's no elbow in PFL. That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe the hammer fist will be enough. But no, I would stay away, you know? I would stay away.
Mm. Gotcha. All right.
Good stuff. Thank you, OAM, for the time today, man. Best of luck in your training camp and everything else leading to your fight on June 23rd. We'll be tuning in 10 p.m. Eastern on ESPN.
Thank you so much. I see you. See you soon.
All right. Take care. We'll see you. Always a fun chat with OAM. I wish you would have seen it as a title defense, but no. He says the slate's clean. This is a new season.
He started growing me a little bit. He's funny. He's fun.
Yeah, he cracks me up as well. And folks, real quick, there's no MMA this weekend, but on June 3rd, the UFC comes back with UFC on ESPN 45, Kai Kara France, and Amir Albazi at the top of that bill. A few days later, PFL 4 with Brendan Loughnane and Jesus Pinedo. And then June 10th is the pay-per-view for the UFC, UFC 289, Nunes versus Aldana. Goes and I will be doing a watch-along for that event. Of course, it's on a Saturday, as usual, 10 p.m. Eastern start time, 7 p.m. the Pacific time zone for the main card. But we'll get in there four fights earlier at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. check it out. Those are your next three events coming up. If you're curious, PFL will come back 1 week later. They usually go, you know, back to back to back, and so they'll be doing that with their heavyweights. Bellator has Nemkov versus Romero on the same night. That's a monster event out in Chicago, Illinois, with Vadim Nemkov and Yoel Romero at the top of the bill. Nemkov will defend his light heavyweight title against the Soldier of God. Sergio Pettis defends his bantamweight title against Patricio Pitbull Prady, a former featherweight and lightweight champ. Now he's going for his third significant title in the bantamweight division. And then Corey Anderson versus Phil Davis. That should be a ton of fun as well. Moving on. All right, let's get to some serious stuff here. Cain Velasquez, his court proceedings have been postponed. So they were supposed to go and get together for to decide. So they call it like a hearing, right? And in that hearing, they would decide when the trial would start, what would be the dates. And then, you know, it's on the calendar. And that's when they bring in their jury and the judge, and they basically try the case over what can be days, weeks, months, depending on this, you know, the size of the case, the magnitude of the case. Well, that date, that hearing has been postponed till August 2nd. So on August 2nd, because think about it, that's like 2.5 months away. That's only then is that when we'll know when the trial is supposed to be set. There's been a lot of delays. And if you'll recall, this whole thing went down in February of 2022 when Velasquez chased down a vehicle containing three people who were part of an incident where one of his children had been allegedly molested. So he lost his mind and chased them for like 7 miles, I heard, or something like that, shot at this car that contained the main perpetrator and his stepfather and his mother. Only the bullets, three of them, hit the stepfather. So that's why he's in a little bit more trouble than just there was an incident, someone got beat up. No, someone got shot at. Now that person survived. But we still haven't began the trial for that. Now, separate to this, the gentleman, Henry Goularde, he has a trial that begins on July 5th, and then he'll answer for his felony charge of lewd acts with a minor. So he has to answer for that, but Cain has to answer for his crime of passion or whatever you want to call it. In the meantime, Cain will continue to wear his ankle monitor, anklet, bracelet, whatever it's called, and carry out his jail time, if you will, at home. He did 8 months in jail, and then the judge allowed him to continue with home confinement. So that's basically where we're at with that case. Well, what are your thoughts on everything that's transpired? Here goes. I know we all just kind of want closure to it all, but you know, he's a high-profile athlete in our sport, so I think nothing wrong with opining on every time we hear something that goes on with this.
I think it's nuts for as advanced as our society is here in the United States, the judicial system is just kind of whack, man, that it takes this long to even get things going, right, in these trials. And I don't know. You know, I'm not really an expert in this field. I guess if that's what it takes to prepare both sides for what they need to do, then I kind of get it. But if it just comes down to, sometimes it comes down to, well, we don't have enough judges or we don't have enough this or that. That's kind of sad because this is a really important thing in our society and it should get as much attention as possible. It's kind of like teachers, right? And how teachers are underpaid and understaffed, and it's such an important thing in our society, yet we don't really treat it that way.
Yeah. I feel the same way. You know, a lot of people get paid a lot of money, and it seems like, I mean, I'm not there all day to see what the docket's like, you know, but it seems like a lot of time gets wasted And I feel like if, when a crime's committed and there's some sort of a preliminary hearing, at that point, we find out when the trial set. These delays, I suppose, could happen in complicated cases that involve safety issues or something extraordinary. But for the most part, I think at some point, you wouldn't agree on the date, right? You get to the hearing, the preliminary hearing, and you say, how about October 2nd? Well, I don't think you'd agree to it if you weren't going to be prepared for it. And if you weren't prepared for it, then you got the wrong type of counsel, because they agreed to charge you a certain amount of money to get ready to represent you on this day. Well, let's get to it, you know? And there does seem to be a lot of these delays, delays, delays. The only thing I can think of goes is maybe the Velasquez team senses that there will be some time served. And let's say it'll be 3 years. And he already did 8 months, which will go towards that. And he's probably done another 6 months, I think. He's probably done another 6 or 7 months at home. Maybe they think that the longer they delay it and he's just at home, that by the time his case comes, that time served, most of it will have been at home. That's all I can think of, man. Maybe it's something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised about something like that. I mean, that's what I would do if that's what I sensed.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll update it as we go along. Shout out to Nolan King and Simon Simano for being on top of this from day one. And as we learn more, we'll post it on the site. And then when it's posted on the site, to those that maybe don't go in and read every story, you'll probably hear some sort of an update from us. Lastly, Hamzat Shamayev, he says Israel Adesanya is a cash cow for the UFC. And the UFC doesn't want him to kill that guy, meaning Hamzat to kill Israel. We all know Israel has been taken down, and there's been some success from Pajeda and Blachowicz. And so Shamayev obviously has a decorated wrestling game. I suppose there's some possible truth to that. But at the same time, you know, I'll never tell Israel Adesanya, you know, you seem to hide behind your belt. He kind of goes after stuff, like trying to become a champ against Blachowicz, guy that's 20 pounds heavier than him. Hits hard, you know, that was pretty ballsy. He didn't need time to bulk up like John Jones. And, you know, Whitaker, who's been the second best middleweight for the last 5 years, you know, he's taken care of him 2 times, didn't dance around him. He got Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa, Jared Cannonier, some heavy hitters. He's been in there with some heavy hitters. I don't know if I agree with Hamzat Shamayev on this one. I mean, I think Hamzat Shamayev needs to get to a point where he deserves to fight Israel Adesanya. He doesn't deserve to fight him right now.
I just don't think the UFC would walk away from a big fight. And that, I think, to me, would be a pretty big fight. I do agree with him in the sense that the UFC can protect certain fighters. But in this case, if they don't like that fight, I would probably say it's for another reason. But early on, based on what we've seen from Israel Adesanya and his improvements in takedown defense, I think Hamzat would probably ragdoll him. But can you get to him to do that? I don't know. You know, because Israel Adesanya just doesn't let people grab him, right? He's thrown some heat before that. And if you can have any criticism towards Hamzat Shamayev, it's a little bit, his striking can be brutal, but it could also be really sloppy. And that's not what Israel Adesanya does. He's very pinpoint. So unless you know exactly what you're doing, if you even try and get in a firefight with him for a little bit, it's probably not going to go Hamzat's way either. So I don't know that it's as lopsided as he thinks it is.
Yeah, you know, his last middleweight fight was in September of 2020. So that's when he knocked out Gerald Meerschaert. If you'll recall, July of 2020 was his first fight in the UFC. This was during the bubble. He fought at middleweight against John Phillips, submitted him fast. Then about 10 days later, he fought Reese McKee at welterweight. And that's basically when he became a star, because everybody's like, whoa, 2 times in 10 days, 2 different weight classes. That's nuts, but he did it. Then not too long after that, he fought Gerald Meerschaert and knocked him out. So he went middleweight, welterweight, middleweight. But that was his last middleweight bout, was September 2020. He didn't fight for a whole year, and he came back and beat Li Jingliang as a welterweight. Then he fought Gilbert Burns in April of 2022 as a welterweight. And now that one pretty much said, hey, this guy's a contender at welterweight. We could start talking about him fighting Usman, who was the champ at the time, because he had earned it by fighting, well, Reese McKee, that got him in the door, then Li Jingliang, solid welterweight, but then Gilbert Burns, title contender. He's fought once for the title. That was legit. He messes it all up by missing weight, and he has to now fight Kevin Holland instead of Nate Diaz. Fights him at 180 pounds, so he's neither a welterweight or a middleweight. I guess technically he is a middleweight in that one. But that's kind of where things got fumbled a little bit. And that was September 10 of 2022. We're now in May of 2023. Where's the momentum from that? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think if I'm Israel Adesanya, I'd probably say, look, man, I'll kind of fight anybody. Yes, you do have a strong wrestling game, no doubt about that. But you need to deserve to get to me. Like, you got to get through the guys, you know, same guys I had to get through at some point to fight for the title. I think that's only fair. I think this guy's trying to cut the line a little bit.
A little. I don't blame him, though, because he does put in the work as far as in the cage and outside of the cage of trying to promote himself. So I don't blame him. I think he's taking a shot. If it works, great. If it doesn't, then yeah, no problem going back to that drawing board.
You know what would be fun to see is if Bo Nickel wins his next fight, Nickel against Hamza. Let's you two love wrestling so much, wrestle each other. Let's see what it's like. Then whoever comes out of that will have a lot of momentum towards Israel Adesanya.
Yeah.
Because Israel is waiting for the winner of Whitaker and Dricus du Plessis, which is happening on International Fight Week. He'll fight the winner, I think, I don't know, in September at the UFC 293 card in Sydney. Although July to September seems like a quick turnaround. I'm almost thinking, who can they give Israel Adesanya, right? I still think they're going to take that fight apart and make Dricus versus Israel in Sydney. Really? And they may even pull Whitaker off that card and put him in Sydney. And that's a nice 1-2 punch right there. Put Whitaker against someone. Who that might be, I don't know. But why they give him Paulo Costa, that other guy that's just started off in the UFC? I think that guy should... I think Costa should fight Whitaker. Remember they were going to give us that on the Volkanovski card in Perth, Australia? That's who I'd love to see, Costa against Whitaker on the same card as the other one.
I mean, it should have been that from the get-go. I don't know. I don't know if they would take it apart at this point. Especially, like, you know how Dana is when it's backed into a corner.
His name is Ikram Alsakoff. Aliskarov, he's fought Khamzat before, but not in the UFC. He's 14-1, but he's only 1-0 in the UFC. He got through Dana White Contender Series, and then he beat Phil Hawes. Okay, legit, you know, but you get Paulo Costa? That seems a little bit like too soon, you know, even though he's 14-1, but still seems too soon for someone like that. I think Costa and Whitaker are two established veterans. I'd love to see them fight instead. Yeah. But anyway, just keep an eye on that. I still think that's going to go down somehow. And folks, we want to thank you all, as always, for your support here on the show. So just two quick reminders. Every Monday, we do the Spinning Backlick Show live on YouTube. YouTube.com/MMA Junkie Video, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, myself and Goz, and some colleagues of ours. We'll talk about all the latest news. We'll dive into each topic, and we'll answer some of your questions and comments that are in the chat that accompanies the show. You should check it out. It's live and the interaction's there, and I think you'll really, really enjoy it. But look, once the show's over, if you didn't catch it, just go to youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo and consume it, because it's still fresh and it's still there. And, you know, even though you may not be able to participate, you can definitely enjoy it. So what you want to do is hit like and subscribe on the videos. It'll gain more traction in the algorithm, and we want this thing to blow up, and we could really use your assistance. If you hit that little bell on our YouTube channel, you'll be alerted when we go live. And then the other reminder is June 10th, Goz and I will be doing a watch-along here on MMA Junkie for UFC 289 with Amanda Nunes and Irene Aldana at the top of the bill. She will be defending her bantamweight title on that particular night. And but as you all know, she is a champ. So on this occasion, it'll be the bantamweight title. And yeah, that's about it. I guess if you're curious what else is on that card, I'll tell you real fast. You have Charles Oliveira versus Benil Dariush, Mike Mallett versus Adam Huggett, Dan Ige versus Nate Landwehr, Marc-Andre Barrio against Eric Anders, Matt Schnell against David Dvorak, Khalil Roundtree against Chris Daukaus, Nasruddin Imavov versus Chris Curtis. So I think we have some decent names, but this thing certainly isn't a deep card that the UFC can dunk their chest about. That's my immediate feedback. But anyway, yeah, we'll be covering it as we usually do. And we want to, again, thank you for your support. We're out of here for now. Go out and be a champion. We'll talk to you soon.